football on Off the Ball.
There is no template for success in a big tournament. Some teams start well, finish well. Other teams start dreadfully and finish very, very well. There is no template. In this particular case, though, it couldn't have gone much better than it did last night for England.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Thanks to L'Oreal Men Expert. With 48-hour performance, stay cool when the football heats up.
This is News Talk.
This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. Just before getting to the football, latest scores in the TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Football Championship. So Mayo 8 points, Donegal 1-1 in Group 3, Round 3. And a Group 4 round 3, Meath 1-9, Tyrone 8 points. So the Saturday panel this week on Off the Ball brought to you by L'Oreal Men Expert. When the pressure rises on and off the pitch, resist the heat with Thermic Resist deodorant by L'Oreal Men Expert. The World Cup is the focus over the next hour. Our special guest is Owen Doyle, who played as a striker for Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers, St Pat's, Chesterfield, Preston North End, Bolton Wanderers, Portsmouth, Bradford, Oldham Athletic, Swindon Town, Cardiff City and Hibernian.
I'm now to an outbreak, is it, John? Yeah.
20 minutes have gone.
How's things?
Yeah, good. You?
Good. You enjoying the World Cup?
There's a couple of things I'm enjoying about it that I'm surprised about, that VAR is not in my head.
Yeah, they're doing well with it, yeah.
They're doing well with VAR.
And the refs are letting things go.
Yeah, and yeah. The pace of the games. And I don't feel that the Premier League has been ruined by VAR and the discussion. Like when I'm watching the post-match analysis, they're not talking about refereeing decisions to the extent that they would have been, say, in Match of the Day when the Premier League is on. And it also looks great.
When them flags get pulled at the start of the game, aesthetically, it looks incredible.
And then they have some of the American, now, I haven't heard of any pitch issues with the pitches, but I was looking at the USA-Australia game last night, and they just had a view there of Seattle and the stadium. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
Philadelphia for the Brazil game last night looked incredible.
Yeah, the football is now talking, the under-talking more so than all the politics that are around it, which is something we were all expecting, I suppose, considering that's how the last two World Cups went. But you know, I've very much enjoyed it myself. I think these hydration breaks are a problem, obviously.
Well, I wish they, like Ronnie Whelan, he's on RT television, has been over there and saying that they're essential. So
I watched Ghana against Panama in Toronto the other day and it was 19 degrees and it was raining.
But isn't there a sporting integrity thing that you have to have everything the same way? If you're going to have it for the tournament,
because that doesn't happen in, like, for example, if you're playing in European competitions, as long as if the temperature is over 28 degrees or something, then you have them.
Yeah,
but if it's not, then why just let the game flow?
Yeah, I think the issue I would have with it, and a lot of people have with it, is that it is revenue generation by stealth. It's FIFA trying to get as much money as possible out of the American market, and to bring in four quarters to a game that we've already known for 150 years has been about two halves. That's the issue. It's by stealth, and I don't like it for that reason. Well, nothing to do with the heat. It's to do with the commercialism.
100%. But I don't know if you've noticed the... have you seen that? The new... Every World Cup, a new graphic comes out on the screen. You're like, what's going on here? It takes you a while to figure it out. Remember in Qatar, it was like final third entries and stuff. They brought this in. The new one is match momentum. Have you noticed that? It's like a waves of which way the game is going.
Yes, you see that on the stats analysis, yeah.
Yeah, so like these hydration breaks, the momentum of the game before and after is switching quite a lot. So like I keep thinking of like the story of the week for me obviously was Pico Lopez with Cape Verde.
Yeah.
Incredible performance from him. Would they have been able to achieve that without the hydration breaks? I don't know, because it's unbelievable for them. It's stopping the rhythm of the attack after attack after attack. Right, have a breather. Let's get together, have a few words. What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? Let's go about this way now to make sure we can keep them out. That helps massively. You're only playing for every like 22, 23 minutes now instead of the slog of 45.
It's a fundamental changing of the game by stealth.
Yeah.
Because it's ostensibly for hydration breaks, and you can argue that that is necessary for the players. I mean, look at USA 94, the Irish team. We were just melting in the sun. But it's not really for that. It's for four quarters. It's for commercialism. I was reading that Fox Sports in America can generate, they're the host broadcaster, 250 million quid out of advertising in these hydration breaks. Therefore, if FIFA can see that, they can say, when we're selling rights the next time to all these broadcasters around the world, we're going to inflate our prices massively.
Can you see it coming into European competitions?
Well, I think European, like you look at the way the UEFA reacted to that referee that's been banned, they gave him a game. I think that UEFA have, I would say, a strained relationship with FIFA. Mm. I don't think Premier League supporters would stand for it. They're already at breaking point with VAR. So maybe...
Champions League?
I don't know. I'd like to think that UEFA have a bit more of a connection with the soul of the game, because FIFA don't.
My biggest worry would be, and if you go back a number of years now, especially around the Rodri. So when Rodri got injured, just before he got injured, he was given out about the amount of games that footballers have to play now, especially that top level. They just don't get a break.
Yeah.
This is a way of justifying it, because we're breaking the game up again for you. So you won't be have to run around as hard, because we're giving you 3 minute breathers in both halves on top of the 15 minutes in between for half time. And that'd be my worry long term, is that the likes of UEFA, all these big associations that just want more games constantly, and they want to see the best teams playing all the time and all the best players on the pitch, that this is how they can probably justify that in the future. That'd be me and my cynical mind now, hoping that it doesn't go that way, because I just prefer football the way it was.
Yeah. The only reason to have it is money. Money's driving. I mean, I went to, you know, Boston, where Scotland have been playing.
Yeah.
The Gillette Stadium, or in Foxborough, where the New England Patriots play. I was there 18 months ago. And I counted, once again, it's all stop-start American football. So you're going out for your merchandise, you're going out for your hot dogs, you're going out for your beers, whatever, soft drinks, whatever, burgers, chicken, goujons, whatever you're having. Constant stoppages through the game. But that's built into your whole thinking around it's like going to cricket or going to baseball, or even rugby to a degree. I've built this into my experience, thinking about what this should be, and I'm happy, and I've made an acceptance with that. Can't accept it with football. But I did notice in that stadium in Boston, there was, I would say, over 40 different commercial sponsors of the day, the Patriots, the brand, the advertising hoardings, the stadium. It was constant ads, constant relentless commercialism. And that's what America is about. So I don't know if this is a one-off, but when the money's coming in, they're going, wow, this is an opportunity for us now to change everything. So Spain, to me, is much more, I would say, traditional country in terms of you know, treating fans like equals, not being slaves to corporate sponsors. So maybe there'll be a pushback, but it feels like the genie's out of the bottle.
Mm.
Because America, the only thing that drives America for me, having been there 3 times in the last 5 years, is money.
Yeah.
That's why Trump's in there for me, because people would think, when I'm voting for Trump or for Kamala Harris, what can make me have a better life in terms of making more money? That's the psychology over there. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I only had a very small sample size of experience.
No, any experience I've had over there is
money,
the exact same.
And that's why the superpower is, everything is about service, money. If you want to go for a meal, you're going to get the best service. You're going to get the best steaks, but you're going to have to pay through the knot, because the money, the dollar rolls. We think differently, I think, in Europe.
Yeah, and obviously Infantino's play, for whatever you give out to him, but a very clever fella in the sense of, he knows this is how he can pull in as much money as possible. I think this is his last time. The next time he gets voted in, it'll be his last time he's allowed to be the president of FIFA.
But it's also consolidating his power base, because if I can say to the association, here's another 5 million this year, they're going to say, okay, well, here's, you know, okay, we'll give you the vote.
You deliver for us.
So he is, as much as we might like it or not, he's the king of the game.
Yeah.
He's now become a king of football. So that's the, I suppose, so there's positives and negatives. There's none of this stuff you'd be worried about ICE or any of that kind of thing. And I do think that America, like all, like Russia, like Qatar, like Argentina in the 70s, when you're hosting a thing or the Olympic Games that everybody's got their eyes on, you want to be on your best behavior. So you're going to have then a tournament without any incident, really.
Mm.
They're even trying to roll back on this Iranian disgrace where they were having the players in Mexico. So with all World Cups and everything, you're always going to have a degree of an artifice that they're going to try to make it as good as possible for everybody watching around the world.
Yeah, of course, yeah. You've got your country on display to the world.
Yeah.
But the hydration's breaks aside, what I have enjoyed is this 5 second countdown for throw-ins, and just making the game
faster.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to, hopefully that stays in. I think it is staying in. Post hydration breaks or whatever, like in the future, it's coming into the League of Ireland, which is really good. So yeah, no, I'm really enjoying that, because it just keeps the game, the ball's on the pitch a lot, which is great. So it's no, that's a good one, I think.
Pico Lopez, what a story.
Amazing. Though, watching it with the, you know, the kids. And I've just been playing against them. Yeah, a few chats over the years and stuff. Tough, tough opponent, like black and blue after playing against them. He's one of them fella that he's such a lovely fella. He gets away with murder on the pitch. It's like he's been in the referee's room before the game having a cup of tea with them and that. That's what I used to think. But he's very aggressive, but he was very good, and he was excellent against
Spain.
Against Spain the other night. It was such a good watch. But the last 20 minutes I was up off the couch nearly heading every ball that came into the box myself, you know, just kind of willing it for him, because it's such a great story. And then how he's carried himself around that, because he's leaned into it, which is great. He's obviously a great communicator as well. So like when he's doing the James Corden and he's doing all the interviews, he always comes across so well, which is brilliant. And like he said himself, he feels like he's representing everyone that's wishing him well. Very much like he's not short of saying that, like where he's coming from and the League of Ireland, he gives all them big plugs as well, which is wonderful to see. So he's doing great. And I really hope to go on. Like I really hope they can pull out another result.
They got Saudi Arabia and Uruguay in the group. They had, what, a ranking of 67th versus 2nd. I mean, it is amazing. He had a couple of really big interceptions in Atlanta the other day as well. So, I mean, against the Saudis, Uruguay don't seem the happiest camp. Against the Saudis, I mean, you might have a shot.
You never know. Listen, the confidence you get from drawing against Spain, like, and he could have won. At the end, did the header, the corner kick, thought it was in. You know, the minute it hit his head, I was like, oh my God, this is it. And obviously, he just couldn't get enough power behind it. But even to be still going at it, like, you know, and for all the digging in, to even get up the pitch that late in the game against a team that are so dominant in possession, they have been for the last couple of decades, to give themselves even a glimmer of hope of maybe getting the 3 points. It's an amazing, amazing story.
Who have been the team to impress you most so far? Because everybody's played.
So obviously Morocco, I think, have just been brilliant. Really liked them against Brazil. And it was only for the magician and Vinicius Junior. Like he barely touched the ball until he scored, and then he scores. You know, just get the ball to him, and it's sometimes it's game over. It certainly was the case last night with a goal and an assist. So Morocco, I think, have been very good. They've got a good system there. They work hard. The boy in the middle of the pitch is excellent for them. Bouadi, I think his name is, the 18-year-old from Lille. French born, and he's an excellent, excellent player. There's apparently rumours that Arsenal, I think, are sniffing around him now.
Ayoub Bouadi.
Bouadi, yeah.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. He's been very impressive now.
It's funny because, you know, you think about Mane, Firmino and Salah, and like they're all these players that we know from the Premier League are Pico Lopez, they're household names. And then there's players like Bouadi and Yann Diamande of Cote d'Ivoire that are probably going to be players we know very well now in the next few years, because they're going to be stars.
100%, yeah.
Both teenagers,
yeah. 18 years of age, like, he's exceptional. He broke through at Lille at 16, I think. So like, yeah. He's got good experience for such a young boy, like, you know, and he's obviously very athletic. He's tall. He was excellent against Brazil. He done decent there against the Jocks,
like,
as well.
Keith Tracy said last week on the show that there's no reason why they can't win it. Is he right?
Morocco?
Yeah.
Right, so I don't know if they have that player who can, when it comes to the later stages of competition. I think if you look at the likes of Portugal would have it, in the sense of they've got a few magicians that can create something out of nothing. Bruno Fernandes, for example, or even, you never know, Balkan to the box, Ronaldo just jump higher than everyone and score. You've got the likes of France, you have a few of them, just complete game changers. Elise, Douay, Dembele, they could just, out of nowhere, they could just get something for you. Mbappe even, you know, they've got loads of them. And then you'd have even Spain with Lamine Yamal. Morocco are a really, really good team, and like, they're superstars, they're right back. You know, Hakimi, I don't think that's, and don't get me wrong, he attacks well and all that, but I don't think it's enough for them to actually get over the line. They don't have that kind of standout superstar who can like just flip a cut. Like Argentinians with Messi.
But are they the number one most impressive team you've seen so far, or is it one of the top teams?
I think they've done. France, like, when I seen France that second half, like, you know, Michael, in England,
Michael Olise, I mean, the ball was on a string. I mean, his play around the 10 area was something else.
It's incredible. And that pass, like, he's just, nothing fazes him, and he never looks, I don't think I've ever seen him sweat. Kind of like, you know, when you watch Virgil van Dijk playing, you're like, has that fella ever actually sweat? It looks really easy for him out there, you know. And he's like that in attack, but he's doing everything real fast, but you know he's doing it, but you can't stop it.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of them weird things. Like, I know where he's going to go here, But it's just, how do you stop this? And you can't. He's just doing it so quick, but it looks effortless, you know, and he's got that bit of magic in him. And as you said, like his touch, everything about how he carries the ball, it's like there's the ball's kind of just always on a little bit of Velcro on his feet. You know, it's just kind of constantly stuck to him there. Really good, like really, really good. But yeah, no, it's just France, I think, have been...
Mbappe sharp again.
Yeah.
Really sharp.
He's like, and his comments coming out saying I need to work a bit harder for the team and stuff, you know. No, it's been probably around 10, 12 years now. He's just realised now that he probably should press the odd defender every now and again and help out the other 10 lads on the pitch. But
how did you feel they were, say, from midfield back to goalkeeper, France? Senegal did have a couple of chances in the first half.
But they did, but Senegal are a good team. And look, I think... defensively, I think they're fine. Obviously, yeah. The middle of the pitch there is where you'd probably have the odd question. And they'll come on to England, I'm sure, in a few minutes. I think theirs are in a different position of the pitch. You know, their issues are... And it's probably in that middle of the pitch, I'd say, is where you just... I don't think the... is it... I still feel that, like, from the goalkeeper and that back four up until the six or seven superstars they have in attack is enough to win it.
Yeah.
I really, really do.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is actually... a team in the World Cup that hasn't got a weakness, which is good.
Yes.
That's really good, because I don't think there's anywhere it's like you have full control of every single moment. Like I remember like Spain, probably 2010 or something, playing with the false nine, and just they had the ball all the time. You're not going to be able to hurt them. They were just so good in possession. They didn't even need that striker. I think the top goal scorer was Fernando Torres coming off the bench.
David Villa.
And a lot of times you come off the bench and grab a couple of goals in the game until 15 minutes to go. Remarkable stuff.
You don't need a complete team to win a World Cup. I mean, France won a World Cup in 98 without a striker, really. Or Givarsh.
Look at Argentina in the last one. It's the magic of Messi, like.
Yeah.
You know? There's no way, like, that defence is better than whatever France's or, you know? Yeah, and you're right. You don't need a complete team. But I think that's good that I don't see a complete team now after watching all the games so far.
This is Owen Doyle with John Duggan on our L'Oreal sponsor panel on the World Cup. We're until 3 going through all the teams. If you want to WhatsApp us, you can 087-9180-180 on Off The Ball Saturday here on News Talk. Hope you're having a great day, folks, and we'll obviously update you as we go through the show on all the other game scores and everything else that's going on around us. But England... the XG against Croatia was 2.8, if you believe that stuff. They scored 4 goals in the second half. They really upped a gear. They were due batting them, I thought, was sharp when I was watching the match. Harry Kane is a goal machine. 22 shots, 11 shots on target. Can they go all the way?
I hope not. I think Croatia gave them problems, and I don't think Croatia are what they were.
No, not at all.
And then 2 goals that they scored in the first half are very much... it was like the first time they attacked or something. You know, like I wasn't expecting them to score next thing. Hold on a second, England have conceded here. And this is where I was kind of saying a few moments ago regarding the weaknesses of France in the middle of the pitch. I think it's probably the central defence of England.
Stones and Kanza.
I think I was surprised he wasn't playing. Really surprised with that, but Tuchel's his own man. He certainly is anyway with his decisions, and you kind of have to applaud him for that. But again, their attacking threat is wonderful now. Like Kane's goal from the corner, like in what world do you leave Harry Kane unmarked in the box? Like that should not never ever ever happen. Like of all the players to leave unmarked, you don't leave him unmarked. A great finish from him and all, but he had a free run at the ball to get a good header at towards goal, and obviously he finishes it excellently. And then obviously the timing they scored, obviously Bellingham straight after the break, great run down the channel, Anderson, lovely ball down there for him, and I think he's been exceptional, Anderson, for them, and he hit that ball down the channel, brilliant, and he finishes it so well from a tight angle, but a wonderful time to score. And then the substitutions, and you've got that electric pace. And probably Gordon wasn't on it. Madueke was probably a bit better than him. But then you're bringing on Saka. You're bringing on Rashford. Whew, that's something else to bring off the bench, you know. But it's, can they do it? Yeah, maybe. But I think France are probably just going to be a bit too strong for them. Look, I can't see that defence holding out France.
Tuchel made a difference in his halftime team talk. That's why he's paid the big bucks. That's why he's there, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Obviously, to take the lead twice and then concede twice isn't ideal for confidence, you know. And obviously, just whatever he said at half time, he not as a lot of talk about Anthony Barry's half time interview, but he kind of came out after the game and kind of said similar things to what Anthony said. And obviously, he just put that right in the second half. They obviously delivered that message at the half time mark as well. And he managed to just get it right. And obviously, as I said, like, scoring right after half time is such a bonus for you. Like, you know, it just justifies everything you've said at half time and doing the smart things well. You know, like, the ball comes into Anderson. It's a percentage ball down the channel, but he knows Bellingham's going to make that run, you know. So it's a really clever thing to do. It's kind of like you're earning the right to be high up the pitch, but he manages to finish it as well, which is great. So you've got that early goal. Wonderful. Let's not concede. And they didn't. Bring on the superstar subs then.
You a big fan of Bellingham?
I wouldn't say I'm a big fan. You know, I still don't know what his best position is. You know, he's really good. He's obviously, like, very, very physical. And at times in the match, it looked like he was everywhere. You know, like, there was times where he was, like, making late runs into the box. And then there was times where he was intercepting inside his own box. And all that, you have to applaud. Like, he's not the type of player that's going to take someone on. He's not the type of, I wouldn't say he's, like, got 10 out of 10 passing range. He's a unique player, but he seems to be very effective. He's very effective, and he's I'd say in the big competitions like this, he'd be very reliable for Tuchel. I think he'd look at him and go, yeah, no, I know what you're going to give me here for 90 minutes. I can rely on you. And I think he does that very well.
Anthony Barry did well with us under Stephen Kenny as a coach, and now he's in a big moment.
Yeah, he's flying it. Like, his career, like, skyrocketed. You know, forget he was the Portugal assistant as well. Went to Bayern Munich with Tuchel. Bayern Munich actually paid money for him to get him out of Chelsea, which is very unique for a coach. You know, he wasn't as assistant manager then either. He was his first team coach. I heard a story that when it was Frank Lampard that brought Anthony Barry into Chelsea, and when Frank Lampard got the sack, I heard Thiago Silva rang Tuchel, who would have had a good relationship because they were at PSG together, and said, you need to keep this fella on as a coach. He's excellent.
Yeah.
And anyone I know that's worked under him, especially a lot of lads at Wigan, and I know Anthony, I've had a few points on him, but he's a great fella. Like, he really, really thinks deeply about the game. But yeah, I heard Thiago Silva was the one that said, you need to keep this fella, and Tuchel has kept him ever since.
Right.
Which is remarkable. Now he's England's assistant manager. So he's really come on. Like, you know, his detail, from what I've been told, is second to none. He sees the game how it should be seen, while being very pragmatic about things as well. You know, he's not kind of fully shaped by a certain way of playing or anything like that. So he's fair play to him.
I think a big thing for England is that they have a camp that is all pulling together as well for this long tournament that they hope they're going to be in for here a long time.
Yeah, of course. And I'm sure the media will start throwing stuff at them now try and upset that for some reason. They tend to do things like that in these big tournaments when they sell papers. But Tuchel, he seems to, like, listen, I wouldn't really know regarding egos and stuff, but the likes of leaving Maguire out and Trent out and Foden out and Palmer out, you kind of have a feeling that that's probably behind some of it, you know. And he just doesn't have any time for it in his dressing room, and he doesn't want an environment that has any of it at all. And that's a good thing, obviously, you know. And he's his own man, and, like, from what you're saying against Croatia, like, he's not getting the results straight off the bat.
That's interesting, because I read out the 12 clubs he played for at the top of the show, and could you spot egos a mile off?
Oh, a mile off, yeah, mile off.
In the mirror.
yeah. We have to be self-aware for that, though, John. I'm not there yet. Yeah. Still smelling myself all the time. Yeah, but you can see the egos are everywhere. Yeah, they are, and trying to manage them in a dressing room, you know, is always a challenge. It comes with being maybe the best player in the team or whatever, or what you've done in your career. So would the egos
throw their weight around?
They all come in different shapes and sizes. They all come in different shapes and sizes.
Some might drive a flash car, some might be the most talkative person.
Yeah, some would be rude. You don't know how they're gonna carry it.
Yeah. And I'd say from the very first day in a dressing room to the last day, you learned an awful lot about life.
100%. I have this conversation with loads of people, even like when you retire from football at 35, 36, all my mates would be just getting into the swing of their career. Whereas, like, if you were to talk about a 32, 33 year old in the telly, you're going, oh, there's the experienced centre forward or whatever, as if they've got all the answers to all of life's questions, you know. But at 35, you're still a relatively young man, you know, but you've been bought, you've been sold, you've been told you're useless, you've been told you're grey. You've done good things, you've done bad things, things have gone against you that you thought weren't fair, and you've got to look at a draw as well in some situations that you don't think you deserved. So yeah, loads of, like, it's an incredible learning being a footballer if you can stick it out into your mid-30s or so.
Is it a good education in sizing up people quickly? Another way of saying what I would say, a bar person would be very good at, you know,
yeah.
Seeing that.
I don't think you fully get the real person in a dressing room.
Okay.
I think everyone's a little bit guarded when they come into a dressing room about how they're seen and how they want to portray themselves.
Right.
There's not a lot of open conversations to be happening in there.
It's a bit of a role you're playing.
Bit of a role. You're always acting, yeah.
Okay.
You're always pretending you're better than you are, John. Simple as that.
Owen Doyle here on our Saturday panel and Off the Ball here on News Talk, sponsored by L'Oreal on the World Cup. You want to WhatsApp Owen with a question, or you've got a comment to the competition. I mean, who is your pick? Who's your dark horse? Who's disappointed you? Who's been the best player you've seen so far? Are you enjoying it? Most importantly, 087 9180180 is our WhatsApp number. We're back after this break.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Thanks to L'Oreal Men Expert. With 48-hour performance, stay cool when the football heats up.
This is News Talk.
This is Off the Ball Saturday. John Duggan with you 3 to 5. We have the World Cup, remember, this evening. Group F, Netherlands against Sweden at 6. That is in Houston in Texas. And then 9 o'clock, Germany versus Cote d'Ivoire in Toronto in Canada. That's what's going on before we get to midnight. Also, a bit of news today. A bit of disappointing news for him, obviously, personally. But Ollie Yeager has retired from rugby at the age of 30. The Munster and Ireland prop on medical advice. And obviously, we... wish him well. In terms of the ladies' football results coming through, Mayo 115, Donegal 2-6, a result from Group 3, Round 3, and Meath beating Tyrone 112-110 in Group 4, Round 3. We have James O'Donoghue alongside our Get a Games correspondent Tommy Rooney for the Kerry Armagh game, which throws in at 4:30 in Killarney. So the Saturday panel this week on Off the Ball brought to you by L'Oreal Men Expert. When the pressure rises on and off the pitch, resist the heat with thermic resist deodorant by L'Oreal Men Expert. We're continuing our football chat on the World Cup with the ex-English League and League of Ireland striker Owen Doyle. Owen, the biggest disappointment so far have been in the World Cup?
Spain?
Yeah.
Spain, yeah. But obviously I've got our Pico Lopez hat on there, so it's kind of hard to see it from any other angle in the sense of him doing brilliantly with them instead of Spain being poor. Brazil, obviously they won last night. I watched them against Morocco in their first game and they look like they're going to struggle.
Because they're midfield? Like,
yeah. They
bringing Fabinho on.
Yeah, and him.
Casemiro.
Didn't look right either.
Fullbacks looked a bit iffy as well.
Yeah, and when they went into the World Cup, I was thinking to myself, if they just get that box sorted, you know, the two centre-backs and the two midfielders, and Casemiro and Bruno Guimarães, if they can just get them being rigid or just let everyone else attack, that they might be okay. Because they've got some magic, obviously, in like the likes of Vinicius Jr. and Rafinha, even Cunha. He didn't play in the first game.
Scored twice last night.
Yeah, he came in for Thiago yesterday, or last night, I should say, and obviously done well against poorer opposition, we must say, than obviously Morocco at the time. But Morocco gave them an awful time, you know, really, really bad time. And they were, even when Brazil equalised that day, it was just the magic of Vinicius Jr. that done it.
Yeah.
There was no like team effort. They were really, really poor. And as you said, the fullbacks, like they're about aging fullbacks, you know. They're not the Cafus and Roberto Carlos's of old that you see bombing forward constantly, you know. They're setting their ways and they're stay at home. Which I think a little bit worrying for them, you know.
No shots on target in the second half as well yesterday against Haiti when they were 3-0 at halftime. That's how it ended as well. Rafinha went off. Neymar is available though for Scotland. It'll all be Neymar to save the day.
He doesn't look lean. He doesn't look, anytime you see kind of the odd video of him training and stuff, he doesn't look at it. You know, I can't see him performing well at all. Like, you know, even if he does get minutes on the pitch, it'd be interesting to see how he's going to manage that.
087 9180 180. Mark and Bray in touch. Hi, John. Just remarking on the first red card for a player covering their mouth with a hand during Turkey. And what it wasn't, Turkey.
Paraguay, wasn't it?
Turkey, Paraguay. Yeah, the Texas, Panama, Turkey, Paraguay. Miguel Almiron, a former Newcastle, sent off. for putting the hand over the mouth.
Look, the rule coming in was came in for a reason. It was obviously what we've seen in the Champions League between Benfica and Real Madrid. And I know for like a lot of them South Americans, the Europeans, in every single game they cover their mouth because in some of them countries they have lip readers. And they'll do like a late night show on what they said to each other on the pitch type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's obviously just in their subconscious to cover their mouth. But the rules were there, they're there to stop any like potential racist comments coming across.
And he
don't know what Amarin said. He doesn't seem like that type of character.
No,
from what we've seen of him over the years, that he's gonna. Yeah. But he did it.
It could be completely innocuous.
He did it. Yeah,
he did it. It's like the hair pull. I mean, you know, it's just sometimes can be a stupid thing to do.
But you do it, and you're done, and you're done. You're off, and yeah, it was weird seeing it. Obviously, like weird seeing the new rules coming in. Obviously, the throw-ins getting overturned for the 5 seconds and stuff if they don't take them quick enough. Seen that a couple of times. I think the subs have to be made for it relatively quick as well, getting on and off the pitch, players getting down injured. There was a referee wouldn't let the keeper get treatment there today. I can't think of what game that was. It was great to see because you knew he was just wasting time, like, trying to waste more time.
Yeah, there was an Australia player went down against USA last night, was just, you know, was fine.
Yeah.
And just to get up,
brilliant. Another more of that, please. Like.
Allen in Dublin, the Golden Boot going to be a good race this year. Several hat tricks and braces already with an extra round of games. The higher amount of lower ranked teams. Possible just Fontaine's record could be eclipsed after 68 years of 13 goals was for France in 1958. So it's possible. Everything's possible now when you've got bigger tournament. What about Turkey going out as well? Like, it's funny, 63 shots in 2 matches, no goals.
Yeah, really. Really tough for them, like, you know, they were obviously the first game Australia, they were awful, you know, you're kind of waiting on the magic of Arda Güler to do something.
Yeah.
And he's not really producing at all, you know, and he's obviously this big superstar from the country. You can see his body language is off. It's not what you want to see. He's kind of carrying himself as if he knows he's bigger and better than everyone,
right?
Kind of the type of behaviour you're probably seen Ronaldo over the years, and even probably Bruno Fernandes at Man United over the last few years, where you're kind of saying, just relax with your body language there, you know, you're kind of overreacting, hands up in the air if you don't get a pass, if you don't receive the right pass, you know, all this type of stuff. But yeah, you have to hand it to Australia, like, you know, they were great. They came out the traps, obviously getting beaten by the USA then as well.
How far can they go? Because they got one of the best managers in the game, Pochettino. They're playing a high intensity match, and it did fade away in the second half yesterday, but they will be tricky.
Yeah, and Pochettino's obviously a great, like, he's a deep thinker of the game, you know. I'd say he's fully invested in the four quarters, in the sense of, no, we can do this press here regardless of the conditions because we're getting a breather. We're getting a breather, like an extra 2 breathers in every match. This is fine. And like, you listen to the reports and what he's doing for the camaraderie, a good man for a barbecue by all accounts. I'm a big fan of barbecues myself, John. I don't know about you, but...
How many have you had this summer?
Oh, I've been at it now. I've been at it already.
Are you...
I'd be the type of fella now, as long as it's not raining, I could throw it on in December. Like,
do you have... Like an actual structure, or do you get this stuff in that you dispose of?
Oh no, we've got a couple of. I've actually got a joint griddle.
Right,
it's basically a massive frying pan about a meter wide. Amazing.
And
Pancake Tuesday in my house, right? Now Pancake Tuesday, like historically with the kids, you throw them one at a time because all you can fit on the pan.
Yeah.
Now I get about 20 on at the same time.
Right.
This
okay.
Big bowl of
and massive flipper.
Yeah, and just hands coming in everywhere from the kids.
How long does it take to do the barbecue thing? There's a guy called Connor Wilson. He's I think he's a primetime journalist, and he's on Instagram. I don't know how he has. Where does he find the time?
It's the same as cooking normally, though.
I don't know. It just looks like it's so elaborate and complicated.
Not at all. Oh no, you just walk out the back garden, less of a mess as well, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need to be washing pans around. You just kind of give it a quick scrub and you're away.
Right. So you recommend the barbecue?
Yeah, Pochettino's big on them. Like, apparently he gets all the families in. I think he's done it in his past few clubs as well.
Diego Maradona, the Argentina were doing that a lot in 1986. The big videos of the time, the team bonding, and look, yeah, that's as good a way as any.
Mm.
Ronaldo, you touched upon there. What is he doing on that team?
Well, obviously they're one of the disappointments that I didn't think of earlier on. It went
1-1 against Democratic Republic of the Congo.
It's a strange situation there. Like, it was not strange. We all know what's going on. Like, you know, he's obviously making the decisions more or less. I'd imagine I would be of the belief
that should he be dropped
upstairs, I'd say are telling Martinez he has to play as well, because commercially he's too strong for the association.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Just the amount of kids that buy Ronaldo jerseys and stuff would be just off the charts.
But that's, you know, whether, say if you believe that, that he shouldn't be in the team, that that would be a bigger argument than Portugal's progression at a tournament they've never won. Like, should he be in the team?
It's a hard one because they actually haven't got an awful lot of really good strikers there.
Like Salah Ramos.
Yeah, look, Ramos doesn't play at club level, you know? And so do you put this fella in ahead of Ronaldo, who, even if you're carrying him, a right ball into the box, he could finish. Now, the other day, it looked like that's gone out of his game. You know, like he had that kind of half chance to hit the near post and he gets in the way.
He's always walked around a bit in the last few years, but do you see a deterioration, I suppose, is the thing?
Well, he's obviously not the player he was.
No, but is he continuing to deteriorate even since he went to Saudi, for example?
There was less of a threat looking at him there the other night against DR Congo than there was. Then you would have seen him over the years, you know. And I think he actually hasn't scored for Portugal in a good number of games. I think it's like 8 or 9 games in a row he hasn't scored for them, which that'd be, for him, be very unique considering his goal scoring record.
I remember there's one chance where he snatched a chance and Bruno Fernandes is just behind him.
This is the thing, like, and there's obviously a bit of unease in the camp now by all accounts online and stuff with family members and all getting involved, selfish and all that crack. And he is selfish, but he's like you don't become what he was without being like that, you know. And it's not something you just shake because you're now 41 years of age. That's in you. It's like Mo Salah. And we talked about Mo Salah. Like, if you want to get the best out of Mo Salah, you have to take him for like what he is, warts and all.
Another question in here, Owen. What about the head-to-head rule being ahead of goal difference now? So rooting, for example, Turkey and Haiti out. So, or should it be still about encouraging more goals for goal difference? Have any view on that?
No, is this for the tour place spots? Is it the best tour?
Yeah, no, it's more for like a team like Haiti are already out because Scotland would have beaten them in the head-to-head, for example. So they're...
Oh, head-to-head over goal difference?
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about it too much, to be honest, but
What about then this evening? We've the Netherlands against Côte d'Ivoire at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that one. Well, I am. It's like, I thought the Netherlands were awful against Japan.
Why?
when I was watching them in attack, I felt like I was watching Liverpool in attack.
It's like, it's Cody Gakpo's playing.
Just so passive. Yeah, and that's probably what triggered me. Like Gakpo, like I like Gakpo, but I just know what he's going to do every single time. You know, he's jinking with his left shoulder and he's coming in on his right foot every single time. And he just looked so flat, as if they go ahead, a great header from Van Dijk. And Japan, who are really good in the sense of how their team structure is, you know, they've got 11 soldiers on the pitch there. They know exactly where every single player has to be at the right time. They play a 3-4-3, but when they're defending, it's straight into a back five immediately, and it's really, really good. It's really compact. I wouldn't be one for looking into the defensive approaches of teams, but theirs was excellent to how they did it. But like the Netherlands, like very, very rarely got themselves into these 1v1 positions. Like, as I said, like Gakpo, every time you come inside, you get cut out. Somerville was trying his best, but not enough times to get the ball to him, and not enough times did he just get the ball to his feet and him himself just go, I'm running at this fella no matter what, and I'm going to try to get the better of him because he's capable of it
and scored a good goal. Yeah,
he's capable of it, but he's just not doing it enough, you know. And it's like everything's real flat.
They play Sweden, who have now a fit Isak, it seems, and Jokeres, and Ayari of Brighton, and Graham Potter.
it's
some mix.
It is, and they struggle to get there, which is a unique thing. And then they obviously have that unbelievable win on the opening night. But listen, fit Isak, whatever about Jokeres, like fit Isak, I don't believe he's fully fit now.
Right.
I've only seen the highlights of that game, but
yeah.
I was watching him in the last few games to Liverpool and he was miles off. And I find it really hard that in that time he's made up for it. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm sure he played a lot of friendlies in that time to try to get it up, but it's just not the same intensity of what he'd be going into now. But if he is as a fit, even like 95% fit, what a handful.
Germany then against Cote d'Ivoire later. So Germany looked very slick with their attacking moves, but once again, can you read anything into the Curacao?
It's really hard that, isn't it? Like, you know, and they do look great. And
Havertz does look sharp though.
Yeah.
But
do you throw your hat in them?
You throw your hat in them within a great structure with other brilliant players around
you. Throw your hat on him in the 88th minute of the World Cup final to go 1-1 with the goalkeeper. He's going to hit the back of the net.
Well, he's scored in 2 Champions League finals.
So you are throwing your hat on him?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I don't. He's not the type of player I'd have foot. Like Harry Kane's gone through on goal in the 88th minute of the World
Harry
Cup
Kane
final.
Blew a penalty chance to the France game in the quarterfinals. He missed it. Like.
But he's not. But he's ruthless more often than he's not.
Yeah.
He's efficient more often than he's not. And Havertz isn't like that. You know, like Havertz is.
The reason why I say that, I think Havertz is a moments player. He's not a 20 goal a season player, but he's a moments player.
Yeah, and again, like, he could be a number 9, he could be a number 10, he could be anything across that front 3 or 4 positions on the football pitch as well. You know, he's not set in stone as this out and out number 9. And for the Germans, like, that's probably what they're missing.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be the biggest position that you'd say they're proper missing, like, you know.
Yeah, Cote d'Ivoire, obviously Ahmad, the winner there, Manchester United player against Ecuador. Yandy Amande, 19-year-old, we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, late on. Really late on against Ecuador. And Ecuador, the outside bets for a lot of people, considering they've got that kind of defensive triangle there of Pacho.
And hit the post 3
Casado.
Times. Yeah.
But it's a huge win for them, like, you know. So it's I'm looking forward to that game tonight.
The Scots, would you give them any hope? I mean, the against Brazil? Thought they were quite limited last night.
But did you think? Early goal, like, just break your heart, break your heart.
Inside the first 2 minutes.
Tell you what, you're looking at the videos of all
Tartan the Army.
And just sick that we're
could
not
have been
there.
Us.
Yeah, they would have loved us. They
Boston, amazing. Us, imagine we were in Boston now. No, we wouldn't have been with the Czechia. And how bad have Czechia been, by the way?
Horrific. Horrific, yeah.
Can't take them out of Prague.
Let's not go there.
You're right.
No, let's not go there.
Let's talk about Lionel Messi then. I mean, you're a striker at 38 years of age. How does he keep doing it?
I managed to stay up for it. So glad I did, because
it's a 2 a.m. job.
2 a.m. job, and it was incredible. Honestly, it was incredible. He there was nothing in the game until he just pipped up, and he's the best of all time for me anyway. But he's definitely the best of all time of ghosting in between the midfield and the defence into a pocket fully unmarked, because he goes into these positions. It's like he stands still for a lot of time. He jogs for a lot of time. And then out of nowhere, he's in this position where there's no one near him and no one knows who to go to him, because they know once they leave their slot that they're in trouble. And then that first goal, he just turns, and it's just everything, all of them little touches before he takes the strike at goal are just perfect, like they're perfection. And by the time the ball's leaving his foot, you know exactly, don't get me wrong, Zidane in goal could have done better. He got 2 hands to it, like it should have been stronger hands.
Zinedine Son.
Yeah, and he should have got stronger hands to it, but... that first goal, just to get it off. My favourite one was the second, because it was the rebound off McAllister's strike. And don't get me wrong, Zidane again, not covering himself in glory. The ball does wobble slightly, but he parries it into the middle of the pitch. 9 out of 10 times, any goal scorer going into that position is just absolutely burying that thing at the net as soon as you can before the goalie has a chance of getting up off the ground. Not him. He just sees things at a slower pace than anyone else. And the ball just rebounds out to him, and he just... side foots it at the slowest pace, but he needs to take the speed out of the ball, in fact, and just rolled it into the far corner. The silkiest goal. He's just amazing.
Do you think this was all engineered? That's a bad word maybe to use because of his genius, but when he was a child?
Go on, explain that to me there.
You know, did all this vision and, you know, I mean, like if you look at Maradona was on the streets in Buenos Aires, or Gascoigne was in Newcastle. You know, street footballers. Like with Messi, do you think this genius came from just work between the ages of 5 and 15, or like what sets him apart?
And there's definitely something in there that he sees the game at a different speed. But his game has changed so much. Like, I don't know what they all do as the age. You've seen that with Ronaldo, obviously
38
but, like,
now.
Messi used to pick the ball up off the centre backs and just take on everyone, and there was no stopping him. Doesn't really do that anymore. But his vision, like, he's the best passer of the ball as well. Let's not forget that. Like, and what he sees runs that no one else really ever sees. And how he executes that final pass is remarkable as well. And his touch, like, and in tight situations, unbelievable. One of the weird thing I found, there was a time in the game, right, where he actually ran in behind and he had a shot at goal. Zidane saved it. It was actually a poor shot from him. It was right down the middle. Zidane saved it. It was before he had his hat-trick. And he had the pace of the centre-back. And I was thinking to myself, I can't believe this. I was looking at DePaul, who plays for alongside him, used to be Atletico Madrid, plays alongside him at Inter Miami. And he was like running around the football pitch as well. And he 32 years of age now, DePaul. And I was thinking to myself, these lads playing domestically in this kind of chilled league where it's not high tempo, they're probably coming out of games feeling fresh after 90 minutes. The benefit that could have them in the later stages of this tournament, because Messi didn't look like he was tired at all.
Didn't look.
He looked
38.
He did not look 38. He looked fresh. When he had to get away from people, he still had the little burst of pace. Like, I know any clips you see of him now in the MLS, it's not really like that. It's all kind of, he's walking around the place, then you'll get a bit of magic and he'll score a beautiful goal type of thing. It was a little bit different the other night against Algeria. He had that little burst of pace to get away from people still. DePaul was still able to get about the pitch. This is where I think the likes of England will suffer late on because of what their bodies have been through for the last 10-11 months. But the likes of him, he looked incredible. Did not look 38.
You think they're right there then?
Do we think Argentina are right there? I don't know. So they were up against the poor Algerian side. Like they got half decent when Riyad Mahrez came on for the last 10-15 minutes or so. And all he was doing was just putting balls in the box and just causing a bit of trouble. They defended it so well. You know, Romero was really good. Martinez is really good in defence. DePaul was good. Fernandez, McAllister in the middle of the pitch. But they had Martinez up front as well. He looked really, really sharp. Him and Messi, some of their link-up play was excellent. But I don't know if... It'll depend on him. It'll depend on him. If the games are tight, then yes, I think they're in with a chance. If they can stay in games, as long as he's on the pitch, because I do actually think he has enough still in him after watching that game against Algeria to create a magical moment later on in the tournament.
So many teams you haven't even been able to touch upon, Owen, which we will again. Norway, Haaland, a couple of, Colombia won well against Uzbekistan, Austria. Then the host nations, obviously USA we touched upon, but Mexico now will have home advantage in the last 32, and Canada.
Yeah, Canada's... I watched the first game against Bosnia.
Who are another Czechia.
Yeah. Yeah. And Canada deserved to win that.
Yeah.
Like Bosnia were like every man behind the ball. There was I remember Kolasinac's like unbelievable clearance off the crossbar. It had beaten the goalkeeper. He managed to get a leg on it, smashes it off the crossbar to clear it off the line. And they were quite decent. I don't think they'll go far in the tournament, you know. No. They might go out in the next round. Obviously, the hammer Qatar then. Was that last night? Night before, yeah. And they and really good for them. Like, you know, they don't think they'd won a game in the World Cup before that. So they went at 6-0.
Yeah.
And they went down to 9 men or whatever. Qatar, horrific injury there as well. So, but it's good for them. Like, good for the host nations.
Yeah, Colombia, Norway as well. These teams will do something, you'd have to think.
Yeah, especially the Norwegians. You know, with Haaland there, like, he's just, me and you spoke about him before, he's an alien. Just a full on alien, like, you know, he's just a different human being than the rest of us, you know.
Yeah. So your pick, you went for France, didn't you, a few weeks ago?
I went from France, yeah. I'm sticking to it, yeah.
Yeah. And how wrecked were you the day after the Argentina game?
A mess, yeah.
I did this the first day, South Korea, and I felt I was hungover without drinking.
Yeah, see, I picked a good game, though. I got Messi magic. You know what I mean? You're always able to get through the mess the next day. I was kind of half justified because I got to see Messi. You picked a bad one there, Luke.
I did pick a bad one. Yeah, I think we'll be all going to come to the knockout stage, but looking forward to it. Owen Doyle, thank you so much for coming in.
Cheers, John.
Our Saturday panel in the World Cup with L'Oreal this week on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. So hope you're having a great day, folks. Kerry Armagh, 4:30. We got James O'Donoghue and Tommy Rooney for a bit of a preview and obviously reports during the game. I just need to correct myself there because obviously it is a 4:00 start, isn't it, in Killarney for that game between Kerry and Armagh. 4:00 throw in, and we'll have updates as that progresses. Obviously, as well, we have Football Saturday coming up now very shortly with Johnny Ward and Tim Clancy. Want to WhatsApp as you can, 0879 180 180, on the World Cup. We're back after the news here. This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. We're on air till 5.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Thanks to L'Oreal Men Expert. With 48-hour performance, stay cool when the football heats up.
This is News Talk.